back to Student Ministry of Parents. I am John.
And I'm Susan.
We are here to bring another book in front of our group, but we always like to start with a story from youth ministry. Now, I've given the past two. I can go again, Susan, but I actually believe you've been doing youth ministry longer than me, and you're wiser than me, so
that
I feel like
true. You
should give a story of youth ministry before I go again.
It's just any story. I think I overthink this.
Yeah, you definitely do. It could be any story. You know, there's usually, you know, some meaning behind it or just something really funny.
Well, I was thinking about this weekend, so you can tell me if you want a different story. But this is more about God than necessarily like youth ministry, just about how God is kind. I mean, it is about youth ministry, but you'll understand.
Okay, yeah.
About his kindness and his sovereignty because of just the way my life has gone. So this weekend, I got to go to a bridal shower for someone that I love. She graduated from our student ministry years ago, and she's getting married. And I met her husband, her fiance, for the first time, and I was like, your wife is really special to me. And so I was telling him, I can't remember what I have mentioned in this podcast or not, but I'm from Alabama. And during college, I worked at an all girls camp in the woods of Alabama. And as I got older as a counselor, I stopped being in the cabins and I ran I ran swimming. So I was in charge of the swimming hole because we...
The swimming hole. Okay, back up.
That's literally what it's called.
Yeah, yeah. Was it an actual swimming hole?
200 years old.
How was that ye old swimming hole, you know, me with I was wearing my knickers.
They do have to wear swim caps. I'm not even kidding.
No way. No. Why? For modesty?
No. Swim caps? No.
Can't let people see the top of my head.
No. Actually, why do they?
Were they also wearing capri pants?
No.
And, like, button-down shirts tucked in? All right, you were talking. We just had some technical difficulties. We were laughing too loud.
Might the be whole the eclipse.
The eclipse is taking over our recording. Yeah, our whole system just shut down.
That was very strange.
That is the first time that's ever happened. We've done an entire podcast and realized we weren't recording. We did that twice.
I might have never seen John that defeated.
I was like, oh, man, that was such a good conversation.
It was gold.
Yeah, our best episode was never recorded. So you were talking about
back
a swimming,
at the old swimming hole.
Yeah, you were at a swimming hole camp.
I'll explain. It was a river. We swam in a river.
Okay. So it wasn't a pool that you called the swimming hole.
No, it was literally a river.
That makes sense. You were also in Alabama, so.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Wearing swim caps. For modesty.
When I'm saying it out loud, it sounds really weird, but it wasn't. Anyways, I was the head of an activity. That's what it's called in ministry. So I knew like all the campers. And there was this one camper. I remember she was in seventh grade. I loved her. She was in swimming. Anyways, life goes on. I moved to St. Louis. Someone introduced me to the Kirk and decided to hire me before I'd ever met anyone in the Kirk. And I came in for my first night and they were doing a large group. And I all of a sudden heard this person go, Susan? I turn around and it was this camper. She was a senior in high school and I had not seen her since she was in seventh grade.
Whoa.
And so, you know, she looked very different. I didn't look different. And so it took me a second, but I was like, what in the world? And it was this sweet, it was such a sweet gift for me because I had been pulled out of everything I knew. Like I was really taking this leap of faith of like, all right, I'd never lived outside of the state of Alabama. Like I'd never done something big like this before. And so it was this sweet gift from the Lord of his like sovereignty, putting people in a place in a time and then like bringing it all back together. And now as I've gotten older, it's even been more special to me because like the Kirk is so special to me and youth ministry is so special to me. And this student represents so many different pieces of my life. Like she's like she's the only student I have that like I have different seasons with her. And now that she's getting married, it's really special. But it was one of those things to see her this week. And I was like, man, like the Lord is so creative and kind in the way he'll weave our stories back together. And they're not random, you know? And so she was just this special place for me of when I would feel homesick, she loved camp more than anyone I'd ever met. And so like, she would want to go out to breakfast. We would meet on their senior service days and like hang out, and she would like want to talk about camp. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Like I'm down.
Yeah.
And so again, that's what I mean. This is more about the Lord, but just cause I just saw her this weekend, it was this reminder of like, God is so kind to weave our stories together. And we've said this so many times of like, the older I get, seeing that thread being pulled through all of your life and your story, and like, God's church is not small. And so to end up in these quote, quote, random places of like, wow, like this is a random camp. And then wait, this is a random church. Like, God, how are you doing this? Yeah. And it was just sweet. So anyways, I don't know if you need a different story, let me know.
That's a great story.
It is a cool story. Thank you.
Yeah. And realizing the impact of longevity and, you know, our work we never get to see the end result. Even if like we see kids graduate and we see them later on, they're still being worked on as we are being worked on. And like the Lord gives us these moments for, you know, it's like a kid will graduate and we'll never see him again. You know,
literally. Yes.
Yeah, it's like, see ya. You know, I'm sure there's some youth pastor out there. Well, I mean, I didn't spend much time in youth ministry when I was a youth, but I spent some time who is probably like, I wonder what John's up to.
Would that happen to that guy?
Yeah. Yeah. But like the Lord will give us these gifts every once in a while where we will just run into an old acquaintance, friend. And sometimes it's like, yeah, we'll get to catch up over a meal over like a week or some other thing, or it might just be like a 15-minute conversation.
Well, and I also, as an encouragement to parents listening who actually have older teens, when I'm saying like watching God weave this thread, I'm also like, so I was probably 20 when I met this student, just a dumb college student wanting to be outside for the summer.
Yeah,
like I wasn't overly thinking about my summer plans. But as an adult, I see like God was nurturing something in me of like, oh, I love to be with kids and like have fun with them. And God was training me for what he had for me. I didn't know that. And so like seeing this student 5 years later, what, like, as I look back of like, when we're sending our students into even stuff in college, even in high school, things that they're good at, that it's like, you have no idea what God is fostering in them of like, at a young age, I was discipling people. I had no clue I was,
yeah.
You know, like I wasn't like, I really let to disciple people. It was like, God put me in situations that then built this foundation for me of where he was taking me.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that story is also an encouragement to me of like, who knows what he's doing with your student right now,
but
where he's encouraging them for later.
Yeah. 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 It both takes off the pressure of us in the moment, but also in the reality of letting go when, you know, we've hit like a new stage of life and we're seeing the student graduate, or they've, you know, it's before graduation and they just kind of dip out for a while, but the Lord is still at work and we just get to join him on the mission for where we feel called, and we stay within the boundaries for which we've been called. That doesn't mean outside of our boundaries, he's not at work. And so it's a great reminder that God is at work all over the world through every person, and that it's his mission and his kingdom that he's building. And we just get to participate in that.
Right.
Yeah. So that's one of those beautiful things in all of ministry, but in particular in youth ministry, because we're a part of like the developing years. I just love it so much. Sometimes it brings great disappointment, but most of the time we just see the Lord's faithfulness through it all. All right. So we have been looking over several books. Is this the fourth one where we've done this? I don't know. I was a math guy in high school. Not a math nerd, but
it's okay that you were nerdy, John.
Oh, I was totally nerdy.
No, you weren't.
I was so cool. No. Me and my t-shirts over my collared shirts. You remember that phase?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a weird thing that we used to do.
Yes.
Yeah, long sleeve, yes, collared shirts, and then a t-shirt over it.
I had blocked that.
Yeah. Well, I only remember that because I was at home and I was looking at old photos. I was like, why did we do that?
I was
so weird.
Right before this conversation, I was having a conversation with a friend about how we all went to high school or middle school in hiking boots. That was the trend. We weren't hiking anywhere.
Yeah, hiking from class to class. This is such a drag.
What is happening?
Yeah.
What in the world? Fashion's so weird.
How did we get here? I was a math.
ADD.
Yeah. I was a math guy.
Sorry.
I was only a math guy because math felt easy to me, not because
I can't relate.
Really, I was not interested in it at all. I struggled in the rest of school, so I was like, let me just lean into the thing I'm good at, and I was still mediocre at it. So anyways, this is like our fourth book that we have discussed, I think is our fourth. We've looked at a lot of different things, but this past month I've been reading Andy Crouch's The Life We're Looking For, Reclaiming Relationship in a Technological World.
I'm feeling a little embarrassed because I think you announced this the last time, and I was like, oh, I might try to read that one. Didn't happen.
If you go back to our last episode, I called her out and said, okay. Yeah. And that's okay. We just know each other well enough. Like,
it's not going to happen. He knew I wasn't going to read
that. That just facilitates great conversation for later on. It's fun introducing
I love it.
The book to somebody who's never read it before to see them. It's kind of like I'm watching them live read it. Like, what do you think? And I also am just like summarizing these things. So I'm obviously not getting like all of the stuff because there's too much in there, but I try to pull out the stuff I find interesting, but also the stuff that I feel is cohesive for our conversation. Mm-hmm. So the book really focuses on, like, as he says, like reclaiming relationship, the importance of personhood, what it actually means to be a human. And he gets into some scripture of, you know, the way that we're supposed to pursue each other, which I highly appreciate. But then he also just talks about just the way that we interact in a very isolated world and where we are today, and some things that we've just totally lost and some things that we never actually have had. We've let the development of humanity get in the way of us actually experiencing humanity in the way that we were designed for. So he starts the book with this example from some psychological study where they would get toddlers in a room with their parents, their mom, their dad, and they would tell, this is like so sad to think about, they would tell their parents, don't react to your kid, like just give zero emotion. And it was only within like 2 to 3 minutes of their toddler not getting any sort of reaction from their parent. Like, hey, let me show you this. Or, hey, mom, dad, come and look at this or interact with me. And mom and dad would just give like zero emotion. And within 2 to 3 minutes, a tantrum was thrown.
So like to a person?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Like the toddler would just completely crash. And it was just kind of this telling reality that we need to have social cues. We need to understand, am I heading in the right direction? Am I interacting with you correctly? And when it's only one-sided or I'm not getting the feedback that I need, I'm going to totally break down. It's this physical manifestation of what's happening to us mentally today, where we are being removed from our physical interaction with one another. And so because of technology, and so we're mentally breaking down. I'm not getting the response that I should be getting right now. And he goes even further that, like, when we're born, the first thing, you know, aside from crying, the thing after a baby being born is they're immediately looking for a face. Like, they're born looking for physical connection to see, where have I come from? Who do I belong to? And so it's this baby just kind of looking around. You know, they can't really see that far, but they're trying to get some sort of sense of it. And he gets down to like the nature of humanity, that we just crave physical relationships with people, being in person with one another. And then when you fast forward to where we are today, how much of that have we lost?
Woof. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I mean, I was just thinking about how when you're studying that study, it'd be so interesting now because so many of us are locked into our phones. Like when our kids are like, hey, watch this. And it's like, it is something silly. You know, it's like, I'm jumping off a rock and doing a twirl. You know, it's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I came out here to watch this.
Yeah.
But it's like, I hear what you're saying is those are like building blocks of their building relationship. You're connecting something in your brain. Like it's bigger level than just like, I want my mom to watch me.
Yeah.
And obviously our technology has like sucked us in this like weird coma, like state of, you know, yeah. Like when you're locked into your phone, I'm not even talking about like social media, just like you're reading something, you're sending a text, you kind of can't switch quickly. And so it's, as a parent, I think you kind of get locked in that where you're not able to engage normally because there's always this third party that you're fighting to have actual connection.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It, he had this example of a child who's in a room with I don't know if it was an actual study or he was like recapping a video. It was a while. It's been a while since I read that chapter, but, there was like a kid in the room and there were all these adults who had their phones in front of them. And just, you know, he's recapping it and giving the expression of the child in the middle of the room who every time an adult would put the phone in front of their face, they would run over and swat at their phone and go, no, 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 no. And they were saying, look at me, look at me, look at me, which, you know, that type of that phase in childhood is very self-centered. Not necessarily in a manipulative way, but in a sense of like, I thought this is what we were supposed to be doing.
Right. You're ignoring me.
Yeah. And so every time somebody put a phone, like whatever adult it was, they would run over and be like, no, no. Like their gut reaction, the way that they were born is saying, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. This isn't correct.
You know, I've even thought about that, just the difference of technology, of how hard it is to interrupt someone. And I don't, you know, obviously that might feel different person to person or child versus adult, but I was trying to think of like on a Saturday morning, if I'm reading on my phone, how different is that than like I grew up walking out into the den and my parents would be there. They love the newspaper. Mm-hmm. They would be reading the newspaper, checking in on the week events or the day's events. And I'm like, but there's something about a phone. Mm-hmm. You don't feel like you can interrupt and it's endless, you know, like a newspaper will end, a magazine, a book, something. You might have like a social cue of like, I shouldn't interrupt right now. They're busy.
Yeah.
But I'm like, our children are growing up in a place where like, there is no end to my phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that really is a different, like thinking about how I grew up of, well, my parents were very kind and always interruptible, but they also, if they had a boundary, I knew it wasn't forever. It wasn't like, oh, my dad's going to never look up from that for the next hour.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the things in our lives that you can just do everything on it. Yeah. And for a kid's perspective, they're like, I don't know what you're doing on there. I don't care what you're doing on there. You could be reading the Bible on there. They don't care.
Right. It never looks different.
All I know is that it is distracting you from me and other forms of technology like newspaper or a magazine or a book. They're boring enough, you know, they're not boring, but they're boring enough that a human interrupting me is going to feel more important.
Right.
The thing about a phone is it's not boring enough. We're like, hold on, I got to finish this video. This is pretty funny.
It's really good.
Yeah, let me get to the end of this.
What's this panda going to do today?
Yeah. The things we let us distract us is just kind of crazy. The meme culture is just it's so stupid. A photo that has no context, and then you put a caption on it.
Definitely could get lost in there forever.
Yeah, and we can scroll on those forever. Yeah. Why? Because they're so relatable.
They're so funny.
Yeah, yeah. We are looking at memes to find relationship because they feel somebody created this meme in a way that says, oh, I get you.
Yeah.
And that feels sufficient. And that's what we spend our time scrolling on. Yeah. And the thing that Andy Crouch gets to is like, just put it down and relate to the person in the room. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're by yourself, you're on your phone, you know, that's a whole different thing. But if you're in a room with people, it just changes the way that we were wired.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
If this is a derail, just tell me to skip it. But I'm wondering, does he speak to, I feel like this is something we see in youth ministry a lot because our students do have their phones with them. And I do feel like I see this more with middle school than high school. They relate around the phone. Like, oh, watch this funny video. Like, does he speak to how, like, that is just such a cultural shift. Cause I don't think people are trying to be like, I'm obsessed with technology, but it's like, oh, hey, hey, come here, watch this funny video.
Yeah.
Like, does he get into how do you deal with the fact that that is part of our culture? We relate with people around our technology.
He doesn't really get into that. That is something that is unique with this generation that I feel like is a good adjustment.
Yeah.
I think it's scary. You know, we tend to, the whole thing is not to like shame you, like get rid of your phone. It's how do we relate appropriately with our phones?
Sure.
And I actually think the current teenagers have done a really good job of adapting, of saying, this is not my means of social life. Like I can only survive through my phone, but I can actually survive with my phone. Mm. Like last night, you know, we're at a small group and I had a couple boys who were on their phones because we were just like hanging out at the beginning of small group. And I always make a point, like, what are you doing on your phone? And they were playing a game together. Mm. And I'm like, cool, what are you playing? And it wasn't like I'm over here texting somebody who's not here. It's literally like, hey, you want to play a game?
Right.
And they can play that game through an app. And I'm like, that's great. Like, I would never do that because I don't.
John is so evolved.
He doesn't know technology. I'm not evolved. I'm not a video game person. Yeah. And I'm like, that's really cool. Can I sit and watch you guys play it for a little bit? And then like, you just do your thing. It would be no different than me pulling out a board game and us playing that. And so that's just kind of how they've adapted to, you know, that's the technology we give them. And so they're figuring out ways of how to relate to one another with that rather than through it, which I think is just awesome. And we're going to need to rely on this generation to kind of help lead us through this navigation of technology because it's not going anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. So that's something I'm learning from them. Well, to keep going with the book, he, you know, later on, he talks about the fullness of humanity and what technology has done is it has isolated elements of the human experience. And what scripture teaches us is that we are not meant to be alone, but we are also not meant to let portions of our identity and purpose and personhood to be alone. And so he gets into Deuteronomy 6, the Shema, you know, what the Israelites were supposed to recite every single day, every single worship service, every single food, every single meal, is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And he breaks that down into what the Shema was speaking of is that it is meant to be, we are to be obedient to God with all of who we are. And what we've done with technology is that we've done a really good job of saying, this is really good for my mind, or this is really good for my heart, or this is really good for that. Or we engage in things physically. That is something that the sexualized culture is saying, you know, isolate your physical body, your physical needs from your heart. You know, let your physical needs be met, but don't let your heart get involved. And that's where we've come into this hyper-sexualized society and has become an issue. And so early on, when God was talking to his people, he was saying, no, love me with all of who you are, all at once. And what Andy Crouch gets into is like, you can't do personhood well if you spend most of your time isolating those things out. You are not just a heart. You're not just a mind. You're not just a soul. You're not just a body. You're all of those things collectively. And you can't do that well. And it takes a different way of thinking, a different way of living. It takes a different strategy of engaging your technology. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I just think it's helpful. I think like when you're saying isolating pieces with technology and like what that's doing to our personhood. I also was thinking the problem with technology is it's just not intentional. Like I'll say how I use it. I'm not like, oh, I'm going to go read this good article. You know, that's not how I would engage with technology. Kent, my husband, he loves to read, and he uses his iPad to like read books and read articles.
Yeah.
He's like actually using his brain.
Yeah.
But I the way I think about if I were to put myself in the hot seat of technology, I'm like, it's kind of sad because it's not an intentional place for me. It's not like, oh, I'm really going to, it's intentional in the sense I probably use my phone the most to check in on people.
Yeah.
But to me, that feels like a challenge. But also, I think I'm always struck by how much of my life probably isn't intentional, just not thinking enough about what I'm doing or experiencing, and how important it really is to remember that we are this whole person. I don't intentionally think like, oh, I'm only a heart, because I lead with my heart. That's
yeah.
more me.
Yeah.
But I don't sit and think like, okay, how do I need to incorporate all of me into life?
Yeah.
And I don't know, just hearing you talk just makes me think of like, what do we do as an action step of engaging more with ourselves as a whole person, and just like the beauty of how God's designed us. There's a book, and I might have mentioned it here before, that not surprising, haven't read, but Ken has read it and explained it to me. But it talks about, it's called The Body Keeps the Score.
Yeah.
And it really is talking to this about how this is, we are just so intricately woven, and we need all those places. And it just makes me think about, it is interesting how being unintentional shuts down other places of who I am as a whole person, and that I miss out on myself, like being engaged with who I am fully, but also like how I engage as a mom, as a friend, as a wife, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my things that I feel like we've lost through, you know, the access to internet is the enjoyment of a just endless conversation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to ask questions, both serious and quirky, and just, hey, what do you think about this? Or what do you think like life would be like if, you know, this didn't happen or that didn't happen? And just letting the conversation just feed itself. But then the conversation immediately dies as somebody pulls out their phone and like, oh, this is what Wikipedia says.
Right.
And I'm like, well, okay. All right.
Moment ruined.
Yeah. You know, now I'll never hear your opinion or your train of thought, or be able to pick up in a tangent and going mm-hmm. this way or that way. It really, like, one of the things that we've lost is just the comfort of just sitting in a conversation and not saying like this, I'm going to let this conversation just both fill my mind, but also my heart, in the sense of like, I just want to see where this goes, rather than I need to know the exact fact.
Right. Almost like a curiosity, like our curiosity is still there. We can always get the answer. It is kind of fun to be like, I don't know. What do you think? Or can you remember this? I can't remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, it's both helpful and fun to be able to hop onto Wikipedia and just get information. You know, it's like when you're watching a movie, it's like, I want to know more about this actor. And you can just go on this like tirade of just exploring everything that they've ever done, how much money they're worth. And then just, you know, go on the Wikipedia monster of like clicking through hyperlinks constantly. And you can learn so much, but it only feeds one portion of who we are, which is our mind. You know, we're not letting the movie just take over and letting it, you know, express to us through our heart and through our soul, or even our body. It's like when you're watching a good movie, it's like, it makes you tense, or it makes you cry. It makes you do a lot of different things. When I immediately like, ooh, I want to know more about that character. You're just on the phone, like getting information. And so we need to really engage more fully with things and letting it just be. We've become obsessed with getting answers, obsessed with acquiring knowledge, which, you know, he doesn't get into this, but I always think like, this just takes us all the way back to Genesis, where, you know, when they took the bite of the apple, it was like, I want to know the answer. Like, I want to know what is good, what is bad from my own right. Mm-hmm. We are so impatient in letting the Lord slowly reveal to us truth or goodness.
And just untrustworthy. Like, we just don't trust. Maybe we don't trust him.
Yeah. Yeah. We've allowed our hearts to take on knowledge too fast. Our minds are capable of absorbing information, but our hearts aren't. And so there's this total imbalance of what's going on in our bodies and our whole experience and our ability to worship our God and experience him for all that he's worth.
I was thinking that when you said we are obsessed with information, the hardest thing for me was when COVID started. And all I wanted, I would Google it. I'd be like, how much longer do we think the pandemic's going to last?
Yeah.
Because it was something that was unanswerable and it was uncomfortable. And I could not handle not knowing the answer.
Yeah.
I would research the dumbest things of like, what's going on in Wuhan, China right now? Like, how is their disease going? Because it was this unanswerable thing and it was so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, COVID was a tragedy in its own right, and it had its moments where it was just absolutely awful. But then there was this other flip side where just pace of life was so, so slow. And in some capacity for, you know, depending on what you did for work and before technology kind of caught up with us, it was somewhat of a vacation that we had no idea when the end was going to be. Once we realized we were safe in a sense of like, hey, if we just do these things or we just became comfortable, you know, living within, what did we call those? It wasn't bubbles. It was a bubbles or cohorts or whatever. There was this moment, like life was so slow, like it is on vacation. And what's different about this is like, normally a vacation ends on Friday or Saturday or Sunday and we got to go back to work. But this was like, we could be like this for and we were terrified of the reality of like not knowing, not having that ability to just let the pace of life come at us. We need control and we want it so badly that we just want to dictate every single thing. So the two questions, how does this change how we do youth ministry and how does this, or not change, but dictate how we do it? Or how should this direct us as parents as we engage with the teenagers in our life?
Oh, you asking me?
I'm asking. You're the only other person in the room.
I didn't know it was a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think I'm really kind of stuck on helping them see themselves as whole people and modeling why it feels good to be in real conversation. Like you feel the difference when you've been just wasting time on your phone. I think to a person, if we were like, man, did you feel awesome when you just spent 3 hours on Instagram? I think to a person, they'd be like,
oh, actually, no,
that was stupid.
I either feel gross or I just lost 3 hours of my life. Yeah.
And so like to start showing like, the opposite is really rich. You will never leave a 3-hour conversation with friends being like, oh, what a waste of time, you know?
Even like a 3-hour argument where people are like screaming at each other. Well,
I don't know about this.
I don't love that, but you feel like there's some productivity or something you can take away from it that's going to change how you interact with that person later.
Yeah. Well, and I think even like you're saying an argument, when you're only engaging in technology, it's a one-dimensional friendship relationship versus like experiencing people as a whole. And we see this as youth leaders all the time. When we go on trips and we make a point to say, put your phone away, or we've been places where there is not service. And it is always this gift. We're all slaves to our phones. And when we finally are forced out of it, it is this like, wow, it was such a nice break. That's what we always hear. It was such a nice break to not be with my phone. And it's because the flip side is either really restful or really engaging or fills your cup. Like the list goes on. And so I think it really is making a case for, let's go do something together. I mean, I feel that with my kids all the time because I'm like, I don't want to be like this mom that's been sitting on her phone for 15 years. And then when they get a phone, I'm like, get off the phone. I want to talk to you. You know,
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
I have to model that now of like, let's just go have fun. Let's go do something together.
Yeah.
And so like making a case for that. And that's never too late of, hey, let's let's, as soon as people get home from school, let's just put them in a basket just to like take the temptation away.
Yeah.
And making a case for like, this is really, this is rich. Like being together is richer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It really makes me think about how we schedule our days and we schedule just our activities and even our time in, you know, large group or small group or these trips or anything like that. I feel like the trips are really powerful because it's this opportunity to get rid of our technology, but it's also this opportunity to get rid of our schedules and our highly structured days and hours and all that type of stuff. Because, you know, when I do like a one-on-one with a student, it's like, okay, I got like 45 minutes to talk about everything we haven't talked about the past like 3 months since our last one-on-one. And so like, in some ways I'm coming in like, we got to do all this, do all that. And the best conversations that I've had with students are the ones that are just unprompted or in the moment, or we have the time to just let it linger.
Yeah.
And so it's two things is, you know, creating more unstructured time, saying, I don't know how long it's going to take for us to do this, but I do know that I'm here to be with you in this time and just letting it kind of unfold, but also getting to the end of that time, whether it is scheduled or not, in my mind, like being restful is like, there's no end scheduled, but you know, we live in a very scheduled society. And so regardless, when I get to the end of our time together, thinking it's okay if we haven't found closure in what we were trying to do or hoping to do, or if we totally did something different than was what was planned. And it's this sense of unfinished, you know, conversation. And that's the way I kind of think about ministry, or even with my own kids, is I'm not just having a ton of like one-off conversations. I'm having a lifelong conversation with my kids or even the students in the ministry. Is our goal is for our D group leaders to be with their students for 7 years so that you can have a 7-year long conversation about what it means to have faith in Jesus and to follow him with your whole life. Mm-hmm. Because that, with that bit of mindset, you have the opportunity to stay longer in what you're doing. It's like, I can't, there's no way I can communicate everything in one hour, one-on-one.
It's too much pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's other people speaking into things. And it's because we're whole beings, we're not just a mind. And so I have to be able to react not just to what they're thinking about, but how are they feeling in that moment? But also like how are they feeling physically? And what is the Lord doing to their soul at that moment? How is the Lord transforming them and changing them moment to moment, year to year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's, you know, we never get too far into these books. And there was a lot of other things that I would love to have talked about.
Sorry,
yeah, it's okay. No, it's, you know, these are supposed to spur on the reality. Like, there's a lot that we can be doing, but also there's a lot of great resources. But to tie it all in is like, we can't do it all. We can only acquire so much knowledge. The best thing that we can do is, you know, take our headphones off and go be with people and sit with them in their whole selves in the way that God designed us to be in relationship, but God designed us as individuals to experience in that way. But a couple of things that he did get into is, you know, we've traded personhood for effortless power. We love being able to accelerate through life without having to think about it. We love the advancement of technology, even if it means losing out on things. And one of the great examples I feel like he gave was, imagine explaining our current way of life to a generation 2 or 3 ago. We would sound so advanced. I just thinking about that, it's like, oh my gosh, like you're living in the Jetsons.
Yeah.
You know, you have robots vacuuming for you. you can ask this thing in your pocket any question you want, and it'll give you the most up-to-date answer. And we can do all of these things, and yet what he gets at, he's like, yet we still feel unfulfilled. Mm-hmm. Like, we always think that the next technology is going to fulfill us, and yet it doesn't. It takes us... Are you losing it?
I'm sorry. Andrew fell out of the swing and it took me down.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
There's a grown man sitting on a child's swing in the front.
He fell out of it. I'm so sorry.
He's just having a good time.
He's just swinging on the phone.
Beautiful spring day. 6'4". I think the weight limit on a swing is like 24 pounds.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to break your train of thought, but he totally busted out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh gosh.
I was wondering what you're looking
at. I'm so sorry. Okay. I was trying to push through it.
Yeah. I was trying to push through it and I was like, I have to know what happened.
Sorry. He hit the ground and I was done.
Anyways, so he talks about there's always going to be advancement in technology that are going to quote unquote improve our lives. But even with the advancement in technology, our life is still as unfulfilled as it comes to us. We are living with so much more ease and so much more accessibility with technology, and we still don't have what we want. And that's what he gets down into the gospel of, like, this, no matter what technology we have in front of us, nothing is going to replace our need for Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so we're always going to have to depend on his dictation for our life over, you know, hoping that the next thing will make my life easier, because it won't. You know, just as much as the axe didn't make, like, the early humans, it made their lives easier. It did not replace their need for salvation and their need for relationship. And the next iPhone will not do that for us, even if it comes with, like, a real, like, robot that looks like a human, which is what I've heard that they're doing. I'm just kidding. I don't really.
I was like, what?
I don't know. All right. So our next book, and it'll be our last book before we take a break for the summer, is I'm going to give Susan the option of between three things of what do you want to talk about? So Jonathan Haidt just released a book this month called The Anxious Generation. He wrote The Coddling of the American Mind.
Oh, we did that one.
Yeah, we already did that one. He just released a new book, kind of the sequel, called The Anxious Generation, called How the Great Rewiring of the Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it's the sequel to what he already wrote. The other two books I'm going to give you an option on are Five Lies Are Anti-Christian Age of Our Anti-Christian
Age. I've heard about this book.
By Rosaria Butterfield.
Okay.
It's a little bit thicker. Or The Soul of Desire, Discovering the Neuroscience of Longing, Beauty, and Community.
Gosh, this all sounds so good.
So, of those three, what do you want to talk about?
I kind
of want
to go to that anxious brain one.
That with Jonathan Haidt?
Yeah, but does that make you sad because you've already done some of his stuff?
No, I love his writing.
That sounds very interesting to me.
That's where we will take it. Our last episode of the season, which will be next month, we will talk about The Anxious Generation. And it's something we've talked about a lot, but this might be the latest update on everything that he's learned through all of his writing, anything, any studies that have come out. He is very thorough in his work, so I'm looking forward to that. As always,
sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah. As always, it's great to sit with you guys. And whether you're sitting, driving, running, sleeping, wake up. This is Student Ministry for Parents, and we will see you guys next month.
Over and out.